Welcome to A Katra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're heading into, well, a truly haunting landscape, the spectral town of Comala, to really get under the skin of Juan Rulfo's Pedro Páramo. It's a foundational text, really, for modern Latin American literature.
Absolutely. It's a giant.
You've given us some great sources on this one. Our mission, basically, is to piece together the core story, trace those tragic character paths, and maybe grapple a bit with Rulfo's revolutionary narrative style. It's quite something.
It really is. And the first thing to grasp about Rulfo, I think, is just how little he published. Yeah. You've got The Burning Claim, the story collection, and then this one novel, Pedro Páramo, from 1955. That's pretty much it.
Wow, only two major works.
Yeah. And that scarcity, you know, it almost amplified his impact, gave him this instant mystique, this huge influence. Quality over quantity, definitely.
Makes sense. And published in 55, so right in the thick of things after the Mexican Revolution and the Cristero War. That context feels crucial.
Oh, completely. It emerged from that turbulence. Mm-hmm. And the reception was interesting. Some early readers found it, well, difficult. That fragmented structure, you know.
I can imagine. Not exactly a linear read.
Not at all.
Yeah.
But critics pretty quickly saw it for what it was. Yeah. This vital link between the older social realism and what became the Latin American boom. It kind of opened the door for magical realism.
Right, like a bridge. I heard Garcia Marquez was obsessed with it. Said he knew it by heart.
He did. Claimed it taught him how to write, essentially. Rulfo didn't just capture the political fallout of the revolution's failures. He nailed the psychological, the spiritual desolation. Comala becomes this symbol of broken promises.
Okay, so let's dive into that desolate landscape. It all starts with Juan Preciado, right? His journey.
Yes, Juan Preciado.
And that opening line is just iconic, isn't it? I came to Comala because I was told that my father, a man named Pedro Páramo, lived there. Simple, but loaded.
So loaded. He's there to fulfill a promise to his dying mother, Dolores. Find his father. Claim what's his. A classic quest, almost.
Almost. But the Comala he finds, it's nothing like his mother remembered, is it?
Not even close.
Yeah.
Dolores remembered this, like verdant paradise, yeah. Full of life, rain, beauty. Juan arrives and finds, well, the opposite. Scorching heat, silence, dust. A ghost town.
One source puts it chillingly. It sits on the coals of the earth at the very mouth of hell.
That captures it perfectly. It's infernal. And the supernatural element hits you immediately. It's not subtle.
No, easing you in. He meets Abundio Martinez first, right?
Yep.
Another son of Páramo.
Yep, the mule driver, who it turns out later is also dead or dying, depending on how you read it. But the role kicker is Eduviges Dayada, his first host.
What does she say?
She just casually tells him, oh, by the way, I'm dead. Been dead a while.
Just like that.
Just like that. Rulfo throws you right into the deep end. The dead aren't hidden. They're the inhabitants. They're everywhere.
So that straightforward quest Juan thought he was on?
Yeah.
It instantly changes.
Completely. It becomes a descent. Comala isn't just a location. It's a state of being, a spiritual condition. It's purgatory, basically.
Purgatory.
Yeah. Filled with souls stuck there because of, you know, unfinished business, guilt, old wounds. They're just eternally reliving their sorrows, murmuring their pasts.
And Juan walks right into the middle of this chorus of the dead.
Exactly. It's less magical realism and more like literalized historical trauma. These aren't whimsical spirits. They're the echoes of violence and regret.
Okay, so the structure reflects that, right? It's not linear. It jumps around.
Deliberately so. Rulfo shatters conventional time. You get these fragments, shifting viewpoints.
Uh-huh.
It's like assembling a mosaic, piece by piece. And the biggest structural shock comes, well, midway.
What happens?
Juan Preciado dies.
Our narrator, he just dies.
Yep. Overwhelmed by the heat, the oppressive atmosphere, and crucially, the murmurs, the voices of the dead. He can't take it. He suffocates, essentially.
Wow. Why kill off your protagonist?
Because his death is the key. It's not an end point. It's a transformation. He stops being the outsider looking in and becomes part of the chorus.
So he joins the dead.
He joins the listeners. He lies in his grave next to another dead woman, Dorotea. And they listen together as the past unfolds through the voices of the other trapped souls. The focus shifts from his personal quest to the collective tragedy of Comala, centered on Pedro Páramo.
Ah, okay. Right. So it's through these spectral flashbacks, these murmurs from the grave, that we really meet Pedro Páramo.
Exactly. He's the dark sun everything orbits around, the ruthless cacique, the local strongman, a real archetype of that Latin American dictator figure.
Built his power how? Through violence.
Violence, manipulation, moral decay. You name it. We see glimpses of his calculated cruelty, like his marriage to Dolores, Pod's mother, purely transactional.
To get her land.
To get her land. After his own father dies, he ruthlessly consolidates property, eliminates rivals, even marriage is just another tool for him. And his son, Miguel Paramo.
He had a son who was just as bad.
Oh, Miguel was a terror.
Yeah.
Raped, murdered. Pedro indulged him until Miguel got himself killed falling off a horse. But Pedro's power corrupted everything, even the church.
How so? Through Father Renteria.
Precisely. Father Renteria is this fascinatingly tragic figure. He knows Miguel Paramo was a monster. Miguel killed the priest's brother, raped his niece, horrible things.
And yet
when Miguel dies, Pedro offers the priest gold for absolution. And Father Renteria, he takes it. He gives absolution to the unrepentant killer.
Oh, wow.
It breaks him. He's trapped in his own guilt, knowing he sold his spiritual integrity. It shows how deep Pedro's corrosive influence went. Nobody was immune.
So this tyrant, fueled by greed and violence, but there's an emotional core too, isn't there? His obsession with Susanna San Juan.
Ah, Susanna.
Yeah.
That's the great paradox of Pedro Paramo. He controls this entire region, everyone in it, except he's utterly consumed by his love, his memory, Susanna.
Love.
Exactly. He holds onto this idealized image from when they were young, flying kites. He remembers her lips, cool, as if they had just been kissed by the dawn. It's poetic, almost pure.
But the reality is different.
Utterly. He spends years and uses all his power to finally bring her back to Comala, to possess her. But when she returns, she's lost.
How so?
Haunted by the death of her previous husband, Florentino. She descends into a kind of madness, living in her own world. She's physically there, but spiritually inaccessible to Pedro.
So the one thing he truly wants, he can't have.
Exactly. His absolute power is useless against her inner world. Her madness becomes this unintentional, tragic form of rebellion. She's the only one truly beyond his control.
And her death is the final straw for him.
It pushes him over the edge into pure nihilism. He's grieving, lost in his obsession, but the townspeople, they mistake the funeral bell for fiesta bells and start celebrating.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Pedro hears the celebration during his mourning and something snaps. He decides to punish the entire town for their perceived indifference. He vows, I will cross my arms.
Meaning
he'll just let Comala die, withdraw his support, let the fields go barren, let everything crumble. He essentially wills the town into the ruin that Juan Preciado finds decades later.
So he creates the ghost town himself out of spite, chilling, and his own end after all that power.
It's deliberately unheroic, almost pathetic. He's eventually stabbed by Abundio Martinez, the mule driver, his unacknowledged son we met at the start.
Abundio comes back.
Yes, drunk and grieving his own wife, demanding money Pedro owes him. There's a confrontation, and Abundio stabs him.
And Pedro just dies.
He doesn't even die dramatically. The description is brutal. He fell to the ground with a thud and lay there, collapsed like a pile of stones.
Like a pile of stones.
Yeah, completely dehumanized. He becomes as hard and sterile as the land he destroyed. No glory, just collapse.
Okay, let's shift slightly. Beyond the incredible story, the way Rulfo tells it is just as important, isn't it? That style.
Oh, absolutely revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
The fragmentation, the jumps in time, the unattributed dialogue where you're not sure who's speaking, living or dead.
It forces you to work, to piece things together.
It does. And that incredible economy of language. It's so simple, so sparse, yet it achieves this intense poetic feeling. There's not an ounce of fat on it.
That style perfectly serves the themes, especially death and this idea of purgatory.
Exactly. Death in Comala isn't peace. It's this endless loop of suffering, reliving your mistakes. The murmurs are the sound of unresolved history.
There's that devastating exchange you mentioned earlier. Don't be afraid. God is with you.
And the reply, what God? Just bleak. It captures the spiritual vacuum at the heart of Comala.
And the symbolism is powerful, too. The name Paramo itself, wasteland. Barren plain.
Right. Reflecting Pedro's own inner sterility and the stay he reduces the land to. And the constant oppressive heat versus the nostalgic memories of rain and water connected to Susanna. It all paints this picture of spiritual drought.
So Comala isn't just a specific town. It's a metaphor.
Very much so. It's Rolfo's critique of post-revolutionary Mexico.
No.
The revolution promised change. But for places like Comala, it just brought new forms of oppression. New caciques like Paramo replacing the old order. The dream died.
The inheritance Juan was looking for, it wasn't money.
No, it was this legacy of sin, this landscape of ghosts, a bankrupt inheritance symbolizing the failure of those revolutionary promises.
You finish the book feeling haunted, yeah, melancholy.
Definitely haunted. There's this profound sense of dread, the weight of all that unforgiven sin pressing down. You realize how the actions of one powerful, broken man can poison an entire community for generations.
So what does it teach us, ultimately? What resonates today?
I think it's that relentless idea that the past isn't past. Historical trauma, the cycles of power and violence, they don't just disappear. They linger, they murmur.
Like the voices in Kamala, they echo until everything just collapses into ruin.
Exactly. Rulfo forces us, the readers, to become listeners in that graveyard alongside Juan and Dorotea, confronting those unresolved traumas.
It really makes you wonder, doesn't it? Are we surrounded by our own murmuring ghosts, the echoes of our own histories that we haven't fully reckoned with? Is Kamala closer than we think?
That's the unsettling power of it.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.